Hi, I'm Eloy Ortiz Oakley, Chancellor of the California Community Colleges, and you're listening to another edition of the California Community Colleges Chancellor's Office Podcast. Today, I have the great pleasure of being joined by Shani Weber, the new Vice Chancellor for Workforce and Economic Development here at the California Community College Chancellor's Office. Welcome, Shani.
Hi, Eloy. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I'm very excited to be here today.
Well, it's great to have you. And today we're going to be talking about shaping the workforce for California's future. This is a topic that's been high on the agenda of many states as we think about the workforce of tomorrow, the future of work, how states and employers and labor organizations are going to interact with each other to ensure that not only California, but our nation has jobs for middle class and working class Americans. So that's going to be the topic that we're going to discuss today. And let me first introduce Shani. Shani is Vice Chancellor of Workforce and Economic Development here at the California Community College Chancellor's Office. She took this leadership role recently and is focused on accelerating progress toward meeting the goals of the Vision for Success, particularly those that relate to workforce and economic development. Prior to coming here to the Chancellor's Office, Shani spent some time at Long Beach City College, which I'm very familiar with, leading several efforts around workforce and economic development, as well as partnering with Goldman Sachs on 10,000 Small Businesses program and leading the Small Business Development Centers. So with that introduction, Shani, let's get started.
Okay.
As you take on this role, clearly you've been very active at forming partnerships with industry, working with them on common goals of student success and economic and workforce development. What do you think is the right ecosystem for achieving these shared goals, for really bringing industry, employers, education providers like our colleges together to pull together the right ingredients to make job creation happen, particularly the kind of jobs that pay a livable wage?
So workforce development is a very, very big topic that we've all been working on. And ecosystem building and shared goals, very, I think, integral in the work of workforce and economic development. And ecosystem building is rather complex, just like, you know, the work we do in workforce and economic development. Mm-hmm. What I've learned from partnerships that I've been involved with is that transparency and goal alignment is absolutely critical in building partnerships and ecosystem. The other thing is knowing what problem we're trying to solve and making sure that those that are involved are clear as well in terms of the problem we're trying to solve, and having as many people as we can at the table working together on solving the same problem. And our community colleges are really key assets in any ecosystem that's out there. And besides really understanding the ecosystem that they're part of, ecosystem building is about the interconnectedness and the nature of collaboration and leadership. Mm-hmm. Understanding what is needed, playing a leadership role in filling that need, and taking a very, very long view, and knowing that we cannot own and drive everything. So it also means finding like-minded individuals and organizations who are willing to help. And the work that I've done around building entrepreneur ecosystem have taught me that it means involving entrepreneurs who have really to take the lead in mm-hmm. that process. And as community colleges, we play a supporting role, just like cities, EDCs, chambers, and other in the ecosystem. So as an example, we had the opportunity to work with the Kauffman Foundation a few years back in the pilot to launch the Innovation Fund at Long Beach City College, which you're very familiar with.
Yes, and that sounds familiar.
Yes, and that was to test the hypothesis that community colleges can be the front door to supporting high-growth entrepreneurship. So we went out and talked to over 100 investors, serial entrepreneurs, business accelerators, and others in the Southern California startup ecosystem before we settled on three sectors where there's a clear gap and need. For that project, student success means that we truly understand the entrepreneur ecosystem and the opportunities where we can plug our students in for experiential learning models, for mm-hmm. internships, and other forms of engagement.
You said a lot in that opening statement. Let's unpack that a little bit. You talked about identifying the problem that we're trying to solve. And this question keeps on coming up. And certainly with Governor Newsom now leading the state of California, he's putting together a future of work commission. He's putting together a commission to look at educational leadership in the state, all with the focus of improving the opportunity for Californians to participate in the economy and for growing the economy. If I was to ask you, what do you think is the main problem we need to solve, particularly in regional economies like You spent some time in the LA Orange County region. What would you say is the problem we need to focus on?
That's a very interesting question for us to think about. I think from the community college perspective, the problem we're trying to solve is the issue of social and economic mobility. Mm-hmm. And understanding that education most often is at the core of addressing that issue. I think the challenge before us is figuring out how to do that from an educational perspective. Because the challenge with the state and with the systems that we have in place is we have these buckets that we think in. So credit, non-credit, not-for-credit programs. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's changing the conversation about how we approach it with students. Maybe it's not about what degrees or how to get them into a program of study, but looking at the realities of what our students face. Most of our students are adult learners, and they have all kinds of life challenges and commitments that prevents them from going to school full time. So maybe it's looking at, when talking to a student, how soon do you need to get to work to make a living and pay your bills? And then figuring out a plan, whatever that plan is, whether it's credit, non-credit, or not for credit, that will take them through the next year or two or three in getting them into a career path. And then hopefully we'll be able to develop a much longer term plan that will work for them throughout their work life.
Right. So you mentioned the role of employers, the role of industry. I hear a lot, and we hear in the news a lot, employers complaining that they can't find workforce with the skills that they are looking for. So as you reflect on that, in your experience, what are the skills that we need to focus on to assist our students in acquiring? And do you see that there is indeed a skills gap, or is there just a lack of communication between employers and education providers?
I've been thinking about that problem for over 20 years. So when I first started my career about 20 years ago, the first workforce program that I launched was a software engineering training consortium with major aerospace companies. And back then, I remember the companies in that consortium lamenting about how the college students that they're hiring lack the skills like communications, teamwork, taking initiative, being on time. And we're still hearing the same things today.
Right.
So one of the things, though, I am encouraged about is that our colleges are increasingly focused on what we call career readiness training. So it lends itself to, you know, I often ask myself questions like, you know, if we have basic skills for our students, maybe it's time we have workforce basic skills. How do we take these career readiness training pieces and build them into our curriculum and have foundational workforce skills that help our students build confidence and earn some kind of credentials or digital badges along the way? I know that there are organizations like ACT and Skills USA that have developed programs or curriculum to do that. I think the challenge for our system is figuring out how to standardize some of these sets of workforce basic skills, which is what I'm calling it, that are endorsed by employers. And then I think the trick is to figure out what metrics we can capture to show us whether these approaches are actually working.
Right.
There's another way of attacking this, only because I've been very involved with the entrepreneur ecosystem, is working with our K-12 partners. I think they're very key because we almost have to start at the eighth grade to teach students an entrepreneurial mindset. The reason why I say that is because a lot of these soft skills that the companies say that they want in the employees, the critical thinking, the problem solving, teamwork, communications, ownership, accountability, all of those, to name a few, these are all traits that are associated with an entrepreneur. And any employer, I think, would love to have an employee that have all those traits.
Right. So speaking of entrepreneurship, let's talk about that a little bit. The California community colleges have not taken a direct position on increasing entrepreneurship or specifically targeting entrepreneurship amongst our students, even though many colleges and many programs lend themselves to entrepreneurship, particularly as the economy continues to change, particularly as more and more people sort of create their own destiny in this economy. How has your experience shaped your thinking? And just to remind folks, you've worked with the Kauffman Foundation, you've worked with Goldman Sachs around entrepreneurship and business development, and you've worked with the Small Business Administration. How do you see us going forward, and how can we leverage the assets of the California community colleges to help more people create their own wealth and to create, you know, a better destiny for themselves?
I think it's about giving our students choices. the ability to have the skills to decide whether they want to make a job or take a job.
Mm-hmm.
So making a job is essentially becoming your own entrepreneur, and taking a job is becoming an employee. And having both skill sets, mm-hmm. I think, just provides so much more opportunities to our students. There's a lot of talk about the gig economy, and
right.
I think the gig economy came about, it's not necessarily something new, it's just people trying to make a living and piecing together what they can, different pieces of part-time jobs to make a full-time pay, essentially,
right?
Because the nature of work has changed. Full-time jobs are not necessarily as easy to come by. Maybe mm-hmm. the skill sets don't match. But ultimately, I think this is what I believe in my travels, talking to a lot of the Lyft and Uber drivers. One of the consistent theme that I hear is about flexibility,
mm-hmm.
being able to work around their life commitments and be able to deal with things like childcare, having to take care of a sick relative. They're either in between jobs or they just have a full-time job but need supplemental income. And the interesting thing is companies like Uber and Lyft has created a business model that has a lot of built-in flexibility
right.
for people to work around.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the question before us is how do we design our programs and our college support system and access to become more friendly and attractive to our students? And how do we remove some of these barriers by designing programs and schedules that are more flexible?
Right. So speaking about flexibility, I think all systems of higher education are struggling with this notion. And there's more and more demands from the economy on our workers as we think more about eliminating the notion of one and done, where you go to school, you go to college, you get your degree, and then you're done. I think more and more we're finding that that's no longer the case. So extending your examples of entrepreneurship, you almost have to be part-time entrepreneur all the time in today's economy. So how do you see the community colleges adapt to this new environment and build platforms and programs that allow individuals to continue to update their skills or to reskill going forward?
So the idea of reskilling, it goes back to all of the flexibility that we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the work that you have been leading us through, you know, with the vision of success and looking at redesigning the work community colleges do and how we serve our students. 80% of the time, effort, and energy at a lot of our community colleges are focused on serving about 25% of the students.
Right.
It's about addressing the other 75% of the student and figuring out systems and ways of engaging them. It's about inclusion. There's actually a lot of good work that's going on at our community colleges where these students are being served very well, but they may not be scaled, or they may be just little boutique programs that go on. Maybe it's time to spotlight some of those, regardless of whether they're non-credit, not-for-credit programs, and look at the idea of creating a tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
If these programs are successful at serving those individuals, how do we have more of those? And at some point, there's so many of them, it becomes a way of life. That's just how we do it because they are successful and they serve our students.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of new approaches, let's talk about the work that's happening around the 115th College, the California Online College, particularly within the context of this notion of the future of work. And as you've said, we need to be more flexible. We need to establish an entrepreneurial mindset, entrepreneurial skill sets in our students and our adult learners. Given that we have millions of working adults in the workforce today that have little more than a high school education, and given the fact that these individuals are very vulnerable to the challenges of the future of work, to automation, to what may or may not be the benefits of AI in the workforce, what would be your recipe for how we as community colleges adapt? And thinking about how the 115th College, what you know about the 115th College is going to do, what are other tools that we should develop in the community college system?
With the 150 colleges, there's a lot of opportunities for us. The movement towards looking at skills competency the movement towards credit for prior learning. Mm-hmm. I think that can be a very powerful tool. You think about all these hours of investment that students have made in programs that we've offered. Often, I think, are not for credit programs. They have learned skills and they have moved on to obtain jobs.
Right.
How do we help them apply those hours of investments towards some kind of a degree that can work towards a credential? The opportunity to leverage technology. Mm-hmm. And if we're talking about the future of work and automation and artificial intelligence and all of those things, what we're facing is the application of technology and how that technology is going to change how we interact with our students as well.
Right.
And so how do we move towards online is right now the common platform. We're already starting to move towards the mobile platform,
right,
where if you apply artificial intelligence, you can create a customized learning program for any student at any given time,
mm-hmm,
and they can get it in bite-sized chunk on their mobile phone at any place, any time. I think the important thing for us to keep in mind is we will never, that's my personal belief, I don't think that there will ever be a time where instructors are no longer relevant,
mm-hmm,
because the role of instructors, I think, will continue to evolve. And over time, the key is evolving into instructors turning into facilitators. We still have a role to play, and I don't know that machines will can ever replace this, of teaching students how to learn.
Well, I just need a few more years before a robot replaces me.
I want my own personal robot, but mm-hmm, I think that we sometimes discount the human factor when we're confronted with all this technology. Technology is very sexy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we can get easily seduced. But the idea of learning and how to learn and how to think, that's something that machines haven't figured out how to replicate the human brain.
Mm-hmm.
So as an educational system, we have a lot of work to do still, and we have very important work to do because the machines can do all kinds of number crunching and they can do all kinds of pattern recognition. It still takes a human mind to look at what it all means.
Right.
And that's the role that our colleges play.
Well, that should be good news to all of our listeners. So, Shenny, I know that I certainly have heard you talk about this, and I know from your experience at Long Beach City College, you sort of straddled the worlds of career education and traditional general education transfer, working toward transfer. We've had the Guided Pathways Framework be introduced. A lot of that has its roots in career education. So how do you see these two areas bridging, and should we be looking to them to bridge?
Absolutely. So of course I'm biased. For me, everything is workforce.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a role that we play. Workforce and economic development ultimately is about industry engagement. And there's really two parts of industry engagement. The part where it's very relevant to the educational services side is looking at what we can do to support what the academic programs need in terms of bringing industry to the table to inform the curriculum process,
mm-hmm,
and inform the skill sets that's needed for faculty to look at when they're designing curriculum. Looking at how we can support the curriculum advisory committees and putting those together. My thoughts are it's really important to think about who are on those committees in terms of you always want employers who are looking to hire our students,
mm-hmm,
and employers who have already hired our students,
right,
because they can give us some really good feedback about what we need to do differently. And then it's about looking at where are the opportunities to provide the experiential learning that our students need to quickly determine if the career path that they've chosen is really what they want. And where are the internship opportunities? And to do that, if you want to scale internships, you need a network of ready employer partners. And that's where the industry engagements becomes very valuable.
Mm-hmm. So at the end, we're always talking about social and economic mobility. It's about how do we provide the skills necessary for our students to be able to navigate and thrive in the economy going forward.
Exactly.
So I want to begin to wrap up now, but I want to give you one last bite at this apple. As we begin to close, what would be your thoughts for our listeners? What are some of the trends that we should be looking out for? What do you see going on in education, higher education, the commoditization of skills related to wage gains? What would be your final thoughts for our listeners? What should we be looking for? And what do you see coming in the next 5, 10, 15 years?
You know, that's a very interesting question. Commoditization of skills is just something that I've been thinking about. I'll give you an example that I've had my personal experience with. Coming out of college, mm-hmm. I decided to try temping. And I could make $10 an hour if I just be a receptionist, answer the phone, take messages, type a few letters, that sort of thing. But if I knew Excel at that time, I could bump up my hourly pay to $15 or $16 an hour.
Right.
But I didn't know Excel. So that started me thinking about, you know, if you have now a very specific skill that is now tied to a very specific dollar amount. And I think the idea of reskilling our students is about helping them understand as they accumulate these skills, how does it translate into monetary value and how does that increase their wages? And how do these collection of skills help them in the jobs that they have to do and improving their career trajectory? So that's something I think is going to be very interesting to look at. Mm-hmm. The whole credentialing idea moving forward, I'm very interested to see how this whole credit for prior learning conversation plays out. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think the thing to think about is the fact that education has been the least disrupted field in all of the industry sectors. Maybe it's about time because our students need choices.
Right.
And we have to figure out how to give them those choices.
Well, on that note, Shinny, thank you for spending a little bit of time with me today. And I think this is a fascinating area, and I'm sure there'll be more to talk about in the years to come, and I know that you'll be involved with moving us forward in many of these areas. So, again, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I can go on for hours.
Well, maybe for the next podcast. So I want to thank our listeners. You've been listening to another edition of the California Community College Chancellor's Office podcast. This is Eloy Ortiz-Oakley, Chancellor of the California Community Colleges. Thank you for listening, and we will be back to you soon.
Be sure to join us for the next California Community Colleges podcast. This has been a California Community Colleges presentation.